This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
Ironically, it's an impeachment inquiry that will dominate everybody's attention. So to get around the problem of blowback about impeachment, you have to go ahead and do it.
We have our hands full at Sea Change Radio, just trying to cover important stories relating to the environment and social justice. But we also recognize that what's happening in the broader political landscape has a profound ripple effect on environmental and social policies. So today on Sea Change Radio, we're focusing on the presidency and the rule of law. Now that the Mueller report has been submitted to the Department of Justice, calls for impeachment of President Donald Trump have begun to reach a fever pitch. Our guest today is John Storr of the New Haven Register and the editorial board. We discuss the question of whether Democrats in Congress should be moving ahead with articles of impeachment. And for those who are eager to impeach, we ponder whether it's because it's smart politics or because it's the right thing to do.
I like to reggae, but you dance too fast for me. I like to make my thing, so you can make me scream. So go ahead on, red woman, what is wrong with me?
I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by John Storr. He's a writer for the New Haven Register, and he's the founder of the editorial board. John, welcome back to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me.
So I wanted to take a little respite from environmental discussions this week and talk to you about something that will be on the minds of anyone who follows politics, and that's impeachment. Now that the Mueller report is finished, is impeachment coming? You have written a couple pieces for the editorial board recently hinting that you think it is coming, or at least you think it should. Why don't you expand?
Well, I do think it should, but that's a separate question to whether it is coming. That's kind of the two parts of the impeachment debate. There's the moral dimension, which I don't think too many sane, patriotic, civic-minded people doubt. And then there's the political question, which is much thornier. The moral question is fairly clear, and that's historically unusual to have such moral clarity. But the political question is the tough one. And the political question really boils down to what kind of backlash will happen, and whether the Democrats can withstand that backlash. Now, within the question about what kind of backlash, you have to assume there's going to be a backlash no matter what, because that's just the way things are. But you have to try to gauge how intense the blowback will be and what damage you might sustain. Right now, the conventional wisdom is that the Democrats don't want to be in a position that the Republicans were in 1998 when they impeached President Bill Clinton. The immediate fallout from that event was losing members of the House, but not losing control of the House. And that seems to be what's on people's mind. That's one form of the conventional wisdom. The other form of conventional wisdom is, how will the blowback occur, and in which states will it occur? In other words, swing states like Michigan, Florida, that kind of thing, that would hurt the eventual Democratic presidential nominee. So there's a lot of going on when it comes to this political question. But there's increasingly what we're seeing, I think, I've been trying to keep close tabs of this, the political question is becoming louder. I mean, the political pro-impeachment angle is getting louder, and the people are becoming more convinced that there is a political way forward. I wrote recently that I see signs of it actually coming. It's just not being called impeachment. It's being called other things.
Right. That was interesting. And earlier when Nancy Pelosi was being challenged for her speakership, you wrote several pieces and tweets in support of her work and experience being key to the Democratic Party at this juncture. Do you think Nancy Pelosi is actually moving forward with impeachment proceedings in kind of a surreptitious way, or do you think she's trying to herd cats the way it always is with Democrats?
Well, it's always herding cats, I think. But the cats generally just agree about what the problem is. You know, if you know, I don't think really any of them would mind, you know, impeaching the president. They just have to figure out, like, a way of doing it without appearing to be gleeful about it. And going back to Pelosi, I've been saying from the beginning, she will be the very last Democratic leader to favor impeachment, because she wants to take the highest of high moral ground, right? So that whatever action that the House takes, it's not going to be done for partisan purposes. It's going to be done for the sake of the country, for the sake of the Constitution, right? She wants it to be highly principled. Now, her critics could say, well, she's making the bar so high that the Democrats will never get there. And I think that's a pretty legitimate criticism. But I don't see that. I see her slowly moving the ball forward. It may be too slow for some people, and, you know, maybe we'll never get there. But I do see the ball moving forward. She's gone from saying the president's not worth impeaching to, she said on 60 Minutes two Sundays ago, that the president knows he shouldn't be president. And then right after the Mueller report came out, she said in a letter to her caucus, Congress will not be silent. So she's been sending out these signals that are just like getting closer and closer to some kind of decision. And then on Monday, she met with the House Democrats, or I'm sorry, there was a conference call. They're all out of Washington right now. But there was a conference call, and it was the first conference call since the Mueller report was released. And she left the door open to impeachment. I was really surprised that here's what she said, and this was the surprising thing. She said, something to the effect of, if the facts lead us toward impeachment, that's where we're going to go. And I thought, wow, she really said it. You know, I was surprised because, again, I see her as the last person to be in favor of impeachment, right? Now, she's not saying she favors it. What she's saying is, will the facts lead us there? And I find that to be entirely appropriate for a leader of a political party. You know, it's principled, it's practical, it's wise. Maybe she's sandbagging us, but I don't see it so far.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have the Honey Drippers in the house tonight, and they just got back from Washington, D.C. I think they got something they want to say.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to John Storr from the New Haven Register and the editorial board. So, John, if we flip this around today, if it was exact opposite situation right now where there was a Democratic president and the Republicans had the House, but they were in the minority in the Senate, and there was a liberal majority in the Supreme Court, and the Senate was ripe for the taking in 2020. Do you think for a minute Republicans would hesitate about proceeding with impeachment hearings with all of the criminality in mind?
No. And if we were in a different time and place, Democrats wouldn't hesitate either. You know, if we were in 1973, right, mm-hmm. and Donald Trump was president, and we knew what we knew about him, he would have been impeached by now.
Because Republicans were more sane, or because the process was more civil?
Because the process was more civil, I don't know. Republicans more sane, I don't know about that either. What I do know is that you didn't have a right-wing media universe to contend with.
Right.
I believe, along with some others, that the only thing holding up this president is a gigantic international right-wing media apparatus that continues to lie for him and propagandize for his White House and influencing people to believe whatever he says, and that's what's maintaining his floor in approval ratings. That floor is about 41%.
I think that's absolutely right. If there were a Fox News in 1974, Richard Nixon would have been able to carry out his term in full, I believe. Don't you think?
Well, I'll tell you, I think that, but, you know, why believe me? I'll tell you what somebody who knows what she's talking about said. This is Nicole Hemmer. She wrote the book on right-wing media. It's called Messengers of the Right. She was on CNN's Reliable Sources over the weekend, and I'll read it to you what she said. This is the preface. She said, if Richard Nixon had what Trump has, he quote, you would have seen a really different conversation about Watergate and probably a really different outcome. And that's what she said. Now, to go on, she says, if President Nixon had been able to amplify his arguments about a witch hunt in the media, if he'd been able to discredit the congressional investigation, discredit the special counsel who was investigating his wrongdoing, that support that he had, which was 25% by the time he left, that probably wouldn't have crumbled. And the Republican Party, the office holders in the House and the Senate, would have been a little bit more pushed to hold the party line. That's what she said. And I believe her 100%. It's just this propagandizing for the president is holding the party line, you know. But it's not actually unique to Trump. Something interesting happened in George W. Bush's second term. He won re-election, obviously, and he wanted to pass immigration reform, right? My theory is that the right-wing media were not going to have an immigration reform, and he'd already been reelected, and they had no more use for Bush, so they turned on him, and his ratings crumbled. I mean, he never recovered after that. And this also happened around the time that he tried to privatize Social Security. So like everything just collapsed for him, and he never recovered. And you know, he could have been, you know. Even with trying to privatize Social Security, even with Katrina's the disaster in New Orleans, even with, you know, the Iraq and Afghanistan disasters, he still would have had a floor if Fox News and others were holding him up, you know. But they decided, nope, immigration reform is too much. We're abandoning this guy, you know. And that's it. And that's how influential. Like literally, I hope your listeners understand that the only thing preventing Trump from being impeached is Fox News and Breitbart and some of the others, but mostly it's Fox News. They're literally preventing the Democrats from stepping forward. The Democrats are terrified that Fox is going to just turn places like Michigan and the public square in Michigan into a toxic dump. Like, they'll just attack. It will be a hate movement. You know, there already is a hate movement, but they'll just turn it up to 11, and that's what they're afraid of. So the question is, well, what do the Democrats do, right? How do you compete with that?
Yeah, and you lay out a pretty cogent argument for competing with it, not just in messaging, but in terms of the Senate. I think that's a very compelling argument. Why don't you kind of walk through the math that you do in terms of vulnerable senators? Because ultimately, these guys want to keep their jobs.
Yes, they do. The Senate is really the Senate is the Republican Party's soft underbelly. Most of us are focused on Trump, and we have good reason to be focused on him. But it's really like you start picking off one senator at a time, right? And you start pressuring them, force them to choose, hey, look, the Mueller report is really clear that Russia attacked us, right? And even the Republicans don't deny that part, right? Russia attacked us.
Some Republicans don't deny that. Republican senators mostly don't. Trump does.
Yeah. I'm talking about the sane people, right? The people who understand the state, right?
Right.
You know, the sane people who they don't deny that Russia attacked us. You know, anybody who is interested in his reputation as a patriot does not deny that, right? And they do not deny that Russia tried to help Trump, even, right? They may, you know, kind of try to round off the sharp edges, but mostly they don't disagree with that. So you have to pin each of these Republicans between a rock and a hard place, and that rock is loyalty to party, and the hard place is loyalty to America, right? And I think the Mueller report has wedged those two things apart, whereas prior to the Mueller report, prior to Trump even, let's say that, party and country were one and the same, right, for a Republican. You know, my party, my country, everything is in alignment. Now, post-Trump, it's not in alignment anymore, right? And they're scrambling, you know, to justify their positions to people to principled people who are like, hey, you know, what are you doing? You know, I understand party loyalty, but how can you stand by a president who is, you know, saying, hello, Russia, hack those emails for me. You know, some people are still doing that. Now, remember, okay, so going back to how do you fight back against the power of Fox News? Well, one of the things you got to do, I think, is get the mainstream legitimate press on your side. Here's the thing about the right-wing media that your listeners should know about, too, is that it's only as strong as the mainstream press allows it to be. If the mainstream press keeps an open mind and operates in good faith with respect to the right-wing media, then the right-wing media has got them, right?
Right, right.
But if the mainstream press is like, look, I've got your number, stop harassing me with this nonsense, then the right-wing media has no leverage, nothing. They got nothing, right? And so how do you get the mainstream press to treat the right-wing media the way they should be treated? Well, one way is to just drop 10,000 pages of documents on top of reporters, you know, and just bury them in paper and testimony and hearings and expert testimony in Congress and just maintain the attention of CNN and C-SPAN and all television all the time directed at the Judiciary Committee in the House of Representatives and just make sure they're focused, dominate their attention, right? Monopolize it so that they can't pay attention to the crazies over here on the right. ironically, it's an impeachment inquiry that will dominate everybody's attention. So to get around the problem of blowback about impeachment, you have to go ahead and do it.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/seachangeradio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to John Storr of the New Haven Register and the editorial board. So, John, one of the reasons that we look at the Republicans from the late 90s efforts to derail the Clinton administration and then just assume that they would go ahead with impeachment proceedings if the tables were turned is because Republicans are a win-at-all-costs party, and the thing that tends to work is going on offense. I don't see Democrats following that blueprint here when you're talking about them being worried about Fox News making Michigan vulnerable, and there's a lot of ways to overthink this. The most valid argument I can think of about not proceeding with impeachment hearings is that Trump suffocates all other voices in media. And when it's about Trump, even if it's mocking him, just like Howard Cosell said, any press is good press. And impeachment proceedings would dominate our televisions for the next however long impeachment proceedings would go. And so it would be about Trump. Yes, it would be about all the terrible things he did, but it wouldn't be the uplifting messages that a lot of these Democratic hopefuls are resting on, and that they're trying to appeal to people's good sides, and that they're trying to focus on solutions rather than the problems.
Yeah, that's a risk. I think it's whatever risk there is, I think it's worth taking in order to bring American voters' attention to the facts of the matter. So let's just presume that Robert Mueller himself will testify, right? And that's not certain at this point, but say he does. That will matter. That will have a lot of influence, right? Because if Robert Mueller speaks in his Robert Mueller voice about what facts he was able to find and what legal decisions, law enforcement decisions he made, et cetera, that will reach people even if they're inside the Fox News bubble.
Sure.
Now you're not gonna get all those people in the bubble. I hope nobody thinks that I'm suggesting that. You really only need to like erode Trump's approval rating another 10% for him to be like just beyond repair.
We haven't even gotten to the message that it would show to the rest of the world and to people engaged in the political process in this country for the criminality of the Trump administration to go relatively unpunished.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine that. I mean, even just today, U.S. Attorney General William Barr said that one of the people subpoenaed by the Congress is not going to testify before the Congress at my order, he said. That's lawless, first of all. I don't know if it goes all the way to criminal.
And it's become kind of common, right? I saw Mnuchin was saying, I haven't decided whether or not to release Trump's taxes. I'm going to decide around May 6th. And they're just obviously just trying to stall at this point on every front.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, just these things alone. I mean, Jared Kushner is the president's son-in-law, and his security clearance was authorized by some no-name person who's now being asked to sit before Congress and explain himself, and the administration is saying, no, don't do that. There was a vote yesterday by the Oversight Committee in the House to hold that guy in contempt, right? Which means he possibly faces a year in prison, right? How many people are going to go to prison for this president?
Yeah.
And then how many people have to go to prison for people to understand that this is a criminal president?
And then this is a criminal organization masquerading as a government.
Right. That's right. Right. The whole situation on the border is a case in point, right? People have a legal right to come to the United States at any point. They don't even have to be at a so-called point of entry, right? They can just step over the line and say, I want to apply for political asylum. You can do that for any reason. The law is very clear, right? But the administration is sandbagging the law, right? Or if people are criminal-minded, they are defying the law and saying, go back. You can't come in. That is illegal, right? And you should be prosecuted.
And that's supposed to be a deterrent to people who are living in terrible situations, thousands of miles away from America, and they come here seeking some kind of respite, and instead we lock them up. It's unconscionable. Just to tie this up with the environment for a second, last week's guest on Sea Change Radio was Bill McKibben, who's been making the point that, for lack of a better word, freaking out about climate change is completely appropriate. It's the appropriate response at this point. It may not help to just yell from the rooftops, but ultimately everyone needs to realize this fast-moving existential threat is real, and we need to act. We need to make real policy changes. And similarly, just to draw the parallel here, we become numb to some of the stories. If just one terrible story after another, and any rational, empathetic person needs a break from this. So I can understand why people turn off their TVs in disgust. But the Congress has a duty, and that duty is to uphold the law and to do its job. And so I think we agree. Yes, it's important to create laws and change laws like the Senate. We were just talking about that. But also you have to hold other branches of government when they do really bad things to account.
Yeah, when it comes to climate change, you know, you're the authority between the two of us. But my thinking is that the politics will change, and this is going to sound grim, but the politics will change when enough people die.
Yep, that's exactly right. He's the editor of the editorial board. He's also a writer for the New Haven Register, John Storr. John, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Stevie Wonder, Roy C. and the Honey Drippers, and Neil Young.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.